Hi, I'm Peter Haddock, and welcome to another edition of my Podcast with Leadership series. This series is supported by Leica Geosystems, the machine control and surveying specialist. You can find out more about their solutions and how they help connect your worksite at leica-geosystems.com. And today, I am really, really proud to say I've got Matthew Ayres on, and Matthew is the group managing director of the Benny Group. And they include Barton Plant, which is probably the company that most of us understand, but there's a lot more to it, folks, and we'll get into that. But the reason I'm excited about this one is because Matthew is a leader that has literally just put himself out there on social media to say he's made a mistake, but to say he's waving the flag for the industry in diversity and inclusion. And he's made, as a group managing director, a big decision to make that highly visible on Adoza. That's the post I saw on LinkedIn, and I've shared it on my platforms, that made me hound Matthew to get him onto the show. And we're here at 10 in the morning on a Saturday morning. Matthew, thanks so much for coming on.
Good morning, Peter. Thank you for having me, and happy Saturday.
Indeed. Yeah. So we've had our coffees and we're all ready to go for this one. But Matthew, let's start with that post, and let's start with the fact that you have now put yourself out as a leader within the business leader group as well, with a big article on diversity and inclusion. Tell me about it. Tell the audience about it. And everyone, I will put a link into the post and the actual information on the podcast channels to that particular post so you can all see it.
It's been about 12, 15, 16 months since this happened to me. So it was January, February 2020. And a member of staff was texting me. Was one of our operatives, worked in our fleet. And he wanted to get his friend a job. And he was texting me about it and replying as I was slowly. And apparently I wasn't doing it quick enough. And unfortunately he sent me a text which was about me, so it wasn't meant to go to me. And unfortunately he used some pretty derogatory and homophobic terms, and I did nothing about it. So I think the reflection that, and as I go through the article, as I talk about it, had it been any other member of staff that received an abusive text message from someone else in our business, it would have been dealt with to its fullest extent. But because it was me, and because I didn't want to be defined as, as a gay man in our industry, I didn't want to upset someone's livelihood because of my sexuality, I decided just to absorb it and do nothing. And it wasn't really until a couple of months later that I suppose in my head came to terms with it. And hence the dozer became a thing. And we took a piece of steel, huge dozer, and wrapped it in pride colours.
And that's the one that is on the post, folks. And you know what? That is going to take a lot of people by surprise, Matthew, that you went out there and you did that. And it's a big, big statement. Now, I talk a lot about diversity and inclusion. I've done some podcasts recently, unfortunately, on the issue of women that have been abused on social media. And I'm not going to put up with it. And for you as well to be younger than me and a leader and to do that, and to make that statement, that's why I applaud you, and I will applaud you in that sense.
Thank you.
And, it's really important, isn't it, that we make this industry, which has been so dominated by the kind of stereotype gruff bloke type, that we make it more inclusive. And so what are your thoughts on that, and what are you doing, and how have you reacted? Because the post has gone absolutely mental on social media, and the support, the overwhelming support is there, isn't it? So tell me about what that's done for you. And you're a leader now, and that article was in one of the big business organizations, put it out there, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, the CBI approached me and said, we would like you to write an article on diversity and inclusion. And at the time, I remember thinking, what on earth am I going to write about? What have I got to say? I've got nothing to say. And then, like an epiphany, it suddenly came to me, and I just started typing. And the whole thing, the article you read on the CBI website that they published for me is almost as I wrote it. It is very little editing from the first draft, which I think just goes to note the impact and personalness of the story. it's quite hard hitting in that sense. But from an industry and from a leader perspective, I've been overwhelmed, as you said, by the support on LinkedIn. I wasn't expecting it. I genuinely wanted to share the mistake that I'd made to encourage other leaders to use their platform. I am very aware that I am in a very fortunate position. I'm under 30 years old, and I run a group of businesses, and I have a platform that I need to use. And I've through 2020, I've learned that. I've been afforded a very privileged position, and it isn't for me to sit there and not call stuff out unchecked. I was part of the CBI Diversity Conference as a speaker back in end of November, December. And at that, you know, I was talking about it's important for leaders to call things out and do things. And then my article then followed later in February in LGBT History Month.
And that's great. And how have people responded to you? And as the business, how has the business, the people that work with you, responded to you?
I do a month of what we call it at work, at Benny, we do a monthly tea break. And this month, you know, and we do it at the beginning of every month. And this month in March, I stood up in front of everybody on video and I said, look, you know, guys and girls, your support has been overwhelming. And I'd be lying if I, you know, hadn't shared a tear or two at the responses that I got. The moment I put it out there, my instant messaging teams, text messages from my mum, who knew very little about this, who'd seen it, from members of the, you know, my direct team that work for me, so the other directors of the business, from everyone across the business. You know, we've got a shoe business, we've got a construction business, we've got an equipment business, and people at all levels reaching out to say, wow, what a beautiful piece, well written, and thanks for sharing. And then, of course, some people saying, why on earth, you know, how could you have done this? Why did you do it? Why did you not do anything? Why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you talk to us? Which for me was the really personal bit, because these are my colleagues offering support and saying, you know, come on, Matthew, you preach this every day to us. It isn't a one-sided thing, it's a two-sided thing, and we're here to support each other. And that's right.
That's right, because, you know, it can be a very lonely place being a leader, because there are everything around the business, the whole business, the decisions you're making, particularly in this difficult time in the pandemic, you know, so you can feel very alone. And that's, you know, why this is important, because it is all about mental health as well. And it's about, you know, well-being to be able to talk in this way. And I think there's a lot more that needs to be done there. But this podcast is also about finding out a little bit about you, Matthew, and the business. So, you know, moving on from that, folks, and we'll come back to Matthew. Matthew has already agreed to support some of the other work that I'm going to be doing in this area in the future, and I will be supporting Matthew likewise. But Matthew, tell me a little bit about yourself. You've already mentioned you're quite young. You are a leader as a group. I'll keep saying the word group throughout this one, managing director, not just of one business. Tell me about your journey, your fourth generation. It's 80 odd years, isn't it, that this business has been going for. Tell me about that story.
Yeah, so Benny started, we think, at some point in the 1930s, and my great-grandfather started the business. So we were effectively contract farmers, you know, doing a bit of contract ploughing. And then the Second World War arrived, and there was some diversification into supporting that, airfields. And the business has organically sprawled from there. You know, we're not a huge business or conglomerate by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, we've got our fingers in a few pies. And my grandfather was, I suppose, the brains of the business that built it up during the 60s, 70s and 80s into the group that you see it largely structured as it is today. And we're very diversely spread across, you know, making shoes, digging holes, producing high quality loams and soils, hiring and servicing and selling forklifts, and operating inert landfill sites and quarrying. It's a, when my friends ask me or people meet me and say, what do? And you try and explain your business succinctly, it's incredibly hard to do. Especially when you're ever filling a form in online. What, please list your occupations. You scroll down, director, CEO, something like that. What industry do you work in? And I, oh God, there's no option here for this. I would broadly say we just work in construction and manufacturing and leave it generically there.
And I think, you know, looking at Beanie, you know, the reason why I came to look at it really was obviously with my Earthworks hat on, you know, might be able to get some shoes on by the sounds of it as well after this.
Absolutely.
You know, Bart and Plant, a really interesting part of your business, and we'll come on to the other areas of the business as well. But Bart and Plant is, you know, one of those businesses when you read about it, that you are doing an awful lot. You're not just general earthworks. You know, the business is soil stabilization. You know, you can see, even just by looking on the website, you can actually see that you're using technologies like 3D surveying and things like that as well. So tell me a little bit about how Barton has grown and the types of things that you're doing. You're doing large house building, you're doing really big projects in that area. And what has created this USP for that business for you?
Yeah, Barton, it's probably our most well-known, certainly in the industry. And it's our flagship business. I mean, if we go back to where we started in the 1930s as contract planning, it's essentially, whilst it doesn't hold the original name of the business, which was Peter Benny, my great-grandfather's name, Barton Plant in its current guise is our original flagship business. And typically nowadays, we are primarily supporting earthworks builds for new sheds. And the last 12 months being a bit exceptional in those areas, but doing some work for HS2, house builders, and not just earthworks, you know, soil stabilization, and using a product called PowerSEM to change the way the industry operates to, you know, reduce carbon and offer a better product and a better solution to clients.
You've talked about that carbon element. It's a big thing for me. It's a massive thing for me. So let's go into that now, because, you know, when you are looking at carbon, you're obviously looking, in my mind, there's a lot of different areas of carbon reduction. So, you know, for me, it's about the equipment that you have. Then it's about the operators that are operating. It's about the designers and engineers that are designing the plan. So you're not digging once, twice, three times. You're just digging once and really well. And then it's actually about how you reduce the overall vehicle movements and machine movements and activities by making sure you're doing something right. So, you know, tell me a little bit about how you are reducing carbon and what technologies and what types of things you're doing. And I will go into this ProChem thing as well, because it sounds very interesting to me and in a bit of an innovation. But tell me about the overall management and what you're doing and how you've pushed forward with these areas.
We've had the recent Caterpillar D6, is it the XE, the hybrid dozer on one of our sites. And I've got a meeting with David from Finning on Tuesday, and I'm sure it's going to be a hot topic conversation. He's going to try and sell me one. You know, I'm keen that we start exploring where the industry is going with electric, you know, and do I believe that the dozer that Caterpillar has launched that is more hybrid is the perfect future? No, but it's a start of that journey to help get the industry there. You know, we also run an equipment, not a plant-sized business, but an equipment business that operates in the MHE industry. So we're selling, you know, and servicing and hiring forklifts, powered access equipment, sweepers. And, you know, I personally believe that electric is that future. It's being dominated by Tesla and the car manufacturers saying that we are slowly moving over to electric, and that's going to filter its way through into the plant and the equipment space. We were the first, Benny Equipment, our equipment business, were the first company to order the electric JCB telehandler. We've just put our first Farazin telehandler out on hire. It's a really growing space. But like you say, there are so many different elements to managing your carbons or reducing your environmental impact. And fundamentally, most of it comes down to managing your cost well. If you do a job once and do it well and do it properly on site, then it's going to be cheaper for you. But also it's going to be better for the environment. And, you know, I always like to think that Barton operate with a premium brand in the premium space and ultimately always try and do that first time. Yeah, so we started working with Machine Max last year, and we've put their technology into our fleet to start testing it and using it. And they provided all, they've got a couple of products, but primarily their product is a black box that's magnetic that you put on the machine and it picks up data from it. And the basic magnetic box you put on the machine is just picking up vibrations to tell you whether the machine is operating or whether it's idling. A huge amount of hours on your machines is just idle time. The machine hasn't actually done any work. And that's costing you money on the balance sheet from a depreciation perspective, and it's also costing you diesel. So yeah, and idling is one of my biggest pet hates. When if I'm in the yard and someone has left their van running because they want to keep it warm, I'm like, no, you're just literally burning money. Turn it off. You know, engine technology has come so far that you don't need to keep them running in the same way that you would have done, say, 10, 20, 30 years ago. For us, that's going to be a huge part of how we run our business going forward. Also, because it doesn't just tell us who's idling. It also gives us loads of data back. So it helps us produce our accounts quicker. You know, what's going on with our KPIs? Where is our plant and what's it doing? And is it being looked after? So starting to combine all these different things, whether it be technology like that. And we're still very much testing it. You know, we haven't quite got it right in how we're going to use it. And of course, the Machine Max is a software as a service product. It will develop and grow over time.
Into
new areas.
Yeah. And Amit, who's pushing that. And they've got some great backing, you know, Boston Hedge Fund, Shell as well. You know,
so Shell, yeah.
The integration, that there's the potential there to integrate, you know, fuel technologies and the way in which you actually run and fuel your fleets. There's lots of different things, isn't there? And again, you know, these are kind of technologies that the likes of HS2 are really keen to push into the industry from giving that data out. So tell me a little bit about how you are going to, I know you're just trying, you know, you're at the early stages now, but how do you feel that you're going to be able to use that data commercially, but also to win work?
I think at some point in the future, ultimately, a lot of what we do in construction is client-led. Yeah. And because we operate as a subcontractor, you know, the majority of the time. And that is both lovely, but it's also kind of a curse, because the client will only pay so much for something and you're ultimately dictated to by what they want. But I do genuinely believe that as we move down the line, elements like this are going to be mandated. You know, we have an ISO certification. You know, I think more and more of that is going to become focused on what technologies are you implementing? How are you measuring yourself properly? Not just the kind of the generics around all the safety elements of environmental stuff, but really key measurable elements.
And then I did interrupt you there, sorry, Matthew, but I was really keen because I have had a conversation about Machine Max. But basically, you were going on to say the use of other technologies as well. So talk to me about that. What other technologies are you using, like machine control and integrated sort of technologies that are around what I call the connected worksite, for example? Tell me about what you're doing there.
So we've also started using simple, really simple thing, time and attendance management. So we use a product called Donseed, which is from Causeway. We now know in real time who's on our sites and who's not on our sites, when they checked in, when they checked out. Really useful for paying them, obviously, but from a safety perspective, just knowing where someone is and whether they're safe or not and what accreditations they've got from a dashboard that, you know, it can be our HR team, our safety team, our operations team can manage and have visibility of is fantastic. And we implemented that last year. I mean, the pandemic's been a problem for many reasons, but it's also given a lot of businesses a lot of time to do new things. So implementing time and attendance for us, getting rid of paper timesheets for our workforce. We only did that last year. It's crazy. Implementing products like Machine Max and using that time to think differently.
And with that, I guess, you know, what you're doing is, are you tagging someone? Somebody comes, so I'm coming onto your site. Hello, Matthew, mm-hmm. Come to your site. And I want to come onto one of your sites in the future. So what happens to me? I arrive on site. Am I, you know, chipped or what? Do I get a tag? Do I get a nice lanyard to put around my neck? What does that look like with that technology? I'm unaware of it.
Right. Okay. Apologies. So Donseed it's a biometric. I think they also do a facial one now, but fundamentally you put your fingerprint on a fingerprint scanner when you turn up on site, and that enrolls you there, that checks you in, and it might give you a notification with some site information on, but fundamentally it checks you in as a recorded time, and you do the same when you leave, so there's some validity around whether you're on site or off site. It really is as simple as that. I do think in the future though, Peter, I do think stuff like chips is coming. I don't think it's massively inconceivable to think, especially with automation comes with machinery on site. If an operative or a site worker has got a watch on that is emitting data or a signal, it's going to enable you as a your position to communicate with the machine so that it can operate in a safe manner. It might be picking up simple things like, I don't know, your heart rate or something, you know, and talking back to other systems to make sure that you continue to be safe and well and healthy on site. Obviously, those things are key when you're around big plant.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, Caterpillar have done a lot of work on that, which is sort of driver manage, operator management as well, which looks at the, you know, the way people are blinking. They've got the wearables that sort of look at fatigue, how long somebody may have had a sleep at night. So, you know, there's a lot of that coming down the line. And it's great to see that you're already thinking about that. Matthew, I always like to talk about safety and your thoughts on safety and how, you know, the industry has reacted in this sort of difficult time. Can you give me some insights from a safety perspective of what you've done as a business and, you know, some of the outcomes that, that has actually facilitated and your thoughts on how the wider sector of construction has dealt with this difficult time?
Well, we talked earlier, Peter, about the construction industry, you know, being behind when it comes to being productive and efficient and technologically advanced. But actually, where has the construction industry really shined through the last 12 difficult months? Through safety with COVID. Personally, I think the construction industry was really well prepared, not deliberately, but because every single day when a construction company goes to work with its staff, safety first. Your toolbox talks in the morning, you know, following wearing the right PPE. When lockdown happened, when the pandemic became the pandemic as it was, we were set up to start rolling out, what are our new rules on site? How are we going to engage with this? How are we going to do that? And of course, it just happens. And of course, you watch other businesses or other industries try and adapt and evolve, you know, very office, in typical office service-based businesses or retail, slowly adapt and in different ways. But actually, the construction industry was leading the way because it does it every single day. It understands that safety is vital.
It is important that we get that message across and that safety message across. And I think, you know, when you're saying earlier about safety with the new system, you're bringing in people on site and stuff like that, that's also about safety and well-being. So that's really great.
And another point, Peter, I've just recently with my senior management team completed an IOSH course with them because safety is so important. And it doesn't matter whether you're protecting your staff from a pandemic or on a construction site or in a shoe factory or just generally around the office. You know, it's such an important part of what we do. People's mental health, people's well-being, all of this stuff. As an employer, you have a responsibility. And we've completely changed our safety model in the last 12 months to make sure no single person in our business is responsible for safety. And that, you know, through training our team, putting them on proper IOSH courses and saying, look, guys, it's everybody's responsibility every single day to think about the safety of yourself, the safety of your teams, the safety of your customers and suppliers when they're working with us.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. You know, I always say sort of don't walk by as well and raise an issues and things like that. There's a lot of different things in the industry. Take advantage of some of the technologies that are out there so that we can stop unsafe acts very quickly whilst they're potentially happening on site. So it's going to be something that's going to be improved dramatically. And again, I know something that you're going to focus on in relation to your data and your monitoring and your growth of technology adoption. But let's move on to something else now, Matthew. When you're talking about things like being involved in HS2, for example, I'm assuming you're machine controlling up your fleet and you are, you know, using GPS and you're sending models and things like that, and you're making sure that the main contractors are sending you the right information so you can actually have an earthworks model, for example. How is that part of the business working?
I think it's a really, I don't profess to be an expert in this, but I have in the last 12 months, I've got more involved in this side of the business. I've learned a huge amount. I still have a long way to go. I assumed that all of our machines had some capacity around what I call GPS-ness to be able to send a drawing to them and you know, operate that drawing. Yeah. I'm learning they don't. And that if you want to do that, it's very expensive. But, you know, going forward for me, every machine we buy will be GPS ready for that. I suppose also a lot of the people we work with are not necessarily operating in that way completely themselves. You know, I got an email the other day. You know, a client sent us a drawing and said, you know, can you start work on this phase of the project? Here's the plan. And it was a scanned in paper drawing that had been edited in pen because, you know, elements of the industry are still, and this was not a small client, and elements of the industry are still operating in this way. And I think we'll do for some time. I actually think it's probably one of the biggest problems that construction has. Its embrace of technology is far from perfect. And it's, and, you know, construction ranks bottom when it comes to efficiency or innovation behind fishing, farming, because we don't, as a, we don't as an industry yet have it together properly to, I think, bring together all the different elements of technology that are starting to evolve. I think it's coming, but I don't think, unlike retail, you know, my background originally was retail when I left university. Unlike retail, we don't have an Amazon pushing us. There's no Goliath monopolizing its way through the industry, forcing everyone to change. It's being done very slowly and very organically. And there's lots of little bits going on, but nothing's really being brought together cohesively. And as a result of that, you know, that job will run fine with that paper drawing, because the guy that sent it to us has done it 200 times over and it's all good. Would the job have been a bit quicker and a bit more efficient and a bit more profitable if we'd had a proper drawing and it would have been loaded to our machines in the right way? That, yes, 100% for sure. But the industry is still learning and evolving with that. I think, you know, from our business, like I said, you know, every machine we buy going forward will have GPS on it. But I think we've still got to, as an industry and as a business, I personally have got a lot to learn about how we get this right and how we utilize it and manage it in the right way. And I think we'll be looking for different roles inside our business. So, you know, we have an IT team that support what we do every day. Do our laptops turn on? Do our mobile phones work? But they don't yet have the skills or the specialism or the understanding around this. And actually, this is a core part of, you know, being an earth mover and doing work. And they're slowly, you know, our IT team are slowly moving towards that. But, you know, I do fundamentally see part of our organizational makeup being, you know, being a team that are, you know, technical. And I don't see them having the title, you know, or qualifications around engineering or GPS or having, you know, worked with Leica or Trimble. I see it more as people who understand that, you know, the construction companies that get, you know, get themselves together when it comes to technology will be the ones that win going forward. And that might be using things like Machine Max, or it might be through better utilization of GPS, or it could be, you know, putting chips in your staff, or it could be any number of things. But it's about bringing all those things together in the right way that will mean that you ultimately operate better.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Matthew. I would like to invite you to school. Down the road from me is the Leicas, the school, Leica GOC, where basically they've done a whole setup. Used to be the old Hawk facility. They've got a whole setup and a dig area, and they've got machines there with all the technology on surveying. They've even got ground penetrating radars and things dug into the ground where you can do that. So why don't we go when we can and have a session at the school with yourself and some of your team?
Absolutely. I would love that. I'd be like, back at school, like a kid yeah, in a candy shop with all these toys and technology.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we can basically bury some treasure in the big sandpit and see if we can find it as well. So that's a great idea, because, you know, I'd love to be able to take people there and get the opinions of people before and after that experience, because that's what it's all about. It's about giving people that experience of a school style environment. You know, it literally has got sort of lecture area and then all the bits and the toys. So that's great. So coming on to that, you know, it kind of leads us nicely onto skills and bringing people into the industry, how we make it a more attractive place and how we not just bring more people in, but upskill others as well. And so tell me about your thoughts on that. And in particular, you're a young leader and we need more young people in the industry as well. So, you know, what are the types of things we need to do? Because you're part of the Civil Engineering Contractors Association as well, who have been part of putting together the new industry skills plan for the construction over umbrella organization, which basically is the Construction Leadership Council. And I've done a podcast on that, folks, as well. So please take a look at that with Alistair Reznor, who is the CEO there. You know, this is really important, isn't it? And what we do and how we do it differently and how we attract people, and how we upskill people and how we go to school and do all these things. Tell me about your vision on that and what we should be thinking of. And I particularly want to grasp how you think as a younger person, because, you know, a lot of people, grey-haired, including myself, will go one way or the other. And I've got my 13-year-old son interviewing people now and doing a better job than me for young people coming in. So tell me all about that.
So for us, it's something that's quite instilled in me in terms of bringing on the, you know, and it's not about me being young. It's just what my mum has taught me. And so mum, Emma, has been very vocal for some time in our business that bringing on the next generation in our business as Benny is really important to her, because we make shoes, right? And there are not people leaving school with the qualifications to make a pair of shoes. You know, the apprenticeships and the training for making a pair of shoes does not really exist anymore. You'd have to learn those skills on the job. And people are not leaving school or college or university with a desire to go and do that, because they're not aware of it, or they don't think it's sexy, or there are other things that are more attractive as a job. And that translates into construction as well. People are leaving school and not understanding that there's a good, healthy, well-paid career to have in the construction industry. I mean, you'll need to work hard and you'll want to get muddy, but you know, people are not attracted to that. And so as a business, I've always been very aware that with my mum pushing this, that's something that she wants. And everything we do, even during the, you know, even the pandemic, you know, when times are tough for us and we're thinking, you know, what's our business plan and what are we doing? We're still thinking about, you know, apprenticeships, the Kickstart scheme, how we get people into the workplace to support them. And I think that because we're a family business and because our business is built on people, you know, I'm here today, you know, guiding the business with 110 staff, that those people make I don't make the business. Those people make our business, and they make it work every single day. And we've got members of staff who've been with us. I think our oldest member of staff has been with us over 40 years. And we've got multiple, it's way longer than I've been alive. And we've got multiple families. And, you know, we're a family business, but we've got families that work in our business. So maybe across different units or in similar teams. And you've got husband and wives, you've got brothers, you've got all sorts. And it's fantastic to see. So, you know, as a business, we know that, you know, getting good young people in early, whether it be into our business or into the industry, is really important for everybody. So we've signed up for the Kickstart scheme, and that's not been without its challenges. I know it was a new government program during a pandemic. It's been hard to get rolling, but I think this week or last week, I think we finally got there. We've got some roles available for that. We're looking at our apprenticeship scheme at the moment, because we're very, very aware that there's lots of young people now in the workplace who are competing against, you know, a million people circa who are unemployed, and they need the support to come into the industry and to learn. Because if we don't do this now, you know, we're going to continue to have problems in the future. And as a family business, you know, I'm a firm believer that if you support people in the right way when they're young, you know, they'll look after you. I've seen it many, many times over.
Yeah, I think you're right there. You know, I think we do need to do things differently. But that Kickstarter scheme is a great opportunity for people to come into the industry as well. And I think the industry skills plan, you know, is really focusing on how we get people in at all different levels from all different areas of the space. And let's be honest, you know, it is a people industry, this. People forget that. You've just highlighted that there. So people that may have lost their jobs in retail, for example, that have an aptitude for working with people, working in teams, the construction industry is a great place to be, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I've started my life in retail and I've kind of come into construction. And I actually genuinely think that, you know, retail is one of the best places to cut your teeth. You learn first and foremost about customer experience and looking after your customer. And you can take that and apply it to any job. It doesn't matter what you do. So if you come to one of our construction sites with serving your customer in mind, and I constantly bang on about this internally, think about the customer, serve the customer, 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 customer. If you come with that in mind, you know, it comes to a lot of the things we talked about today. If you come with that in mind, you will produce less carbon because you will do the job better. You will do it more effectively. You will do it quicker because you're thinking in the right way. I'm a big fan of that. But construction has so much opportunity for people. And I think the more young people we get in now, the more fresh, young, energetic ideas we are going to bring. Because the future for me of a construction site is not as we see it today. You know, will there be 30 or 40 bits of kit manned by 30 or 40 men running around a site, you know, moving muck? No. I think that I've got this vision in my head that the construction site of the future is a handful of people and I used the word men earlier, and I should be more generic, right? It should be, you know, gender's unforeseen, more women. So I personally think the future of the construction site is going to be, you know, a handful of people on site supported by a team remotely from an office. Those machines will be autonomous. They will be working more hours, and they will be using all the technology that is available to them. And therefore the jobs will be in different places. So instead of us having, you know, 10, 20 operatives on a site, we may have 4 or 5 operatives sitting in a control room centrally managing that site, working closely alongside our office teams. Those machines will probably be supported by a larger number of plant fitters and engineers to keep them moving with more specialist skills, because the machines are going to be operating in a different way. You know, I talked earlier about, you know, our organization having more technical roles, and that's an example of that. There'll be more technical people or IT people supporting all these systems and keeping everything running. And, you know, going back to the original point here, you know, the youngsters, as green and novice and as naive as they might be, they're going to be the ones that bring that change and that energy that help businesses and push businesses to adapt, because ultimately they're going to have to, because there aren't going to be enough plant operators in the future to, I just think that's a fact, to fulfill what's going on. But, and the technology is going to be slightly different.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Yeah, and I think, you know, what I saw this time last year, I was in Vegas, baby, at Con Expo.
Nice.
And basically, I think I might have been coming back, but the great thing I saw there was remote control station from Caterpillar, which allows you know, people to sit in an office environment, be connected to the equipment in, you know, lots of different applications. I mean, it's initially being pushed out into what I call dangerous places to work with a plant, which, you know, people might, you know, find that their plant's bogged down or it's a, you know, it's a remote location, for example, which is doing exactly what you're saying there. And the machine is talking to you and telling you how healthy it is and telling you what it needs. And the machine can sit there and, instead of tracking all the way back and using fuel to then get the other operator to come in and do the next shift, well, fundamentally, you're going swapping teacups, swapping seats and cushions, and sitting there with the next shift going on. And when somebody is there and is an experienced operator in that environment, well, they can mentor others, can't they, as well? And that's really important.
Absolutely.
And so the other thing I'm interested to see, because you're talking about this, what are you thinking about the sort of AR stuff, the visualization stuff that's coming out that can help you sort of see the wearables and the sort of site vision stuff from Trimble, for example, that has come out and the other elements of AR that are coming out with the HoloLens? And what are your thoughts on that sort of future?
Well, I talked earlier about the construction industry not quite getting all these different elements together. So I think we're a long way off finding a perfect use for AR in construction, but we've got to keep, you know, doing this, testing these things and pushing them out there and trying them. For me, you know, as an earth mover on site, I think that's going to be phenomenally important, because you'll be able to sit in whether it be in a room or on site, and look and see, guys, if we dig this out in this way and move this over there and do that, you could model out scenarios to save money, reduce carbon impact, you know, move once instead of move twice. All of these different elements will come together. And like I say, if you've got less people coming into the industry to fulfill these roles in the future, businesses are automatically going to look towards technology to help fill the skills gap and the void gap. We're very much a construction-led group of companies. And I've grown up, I don't profess to be an expert, but I've grown up with construction. And I've watched very talented people, you know, run construction sites, and their knowledge is built over decades of experience, and that is slowly starting to, I think, disappear as we, you know, as youngsters don't come into the workplace. So we will automatically look towards technology to make that happen, and AR is a great example of some, I suppose at the moment I kind of view it as some cool stuff, but actually in the future will really serve something very meaningful around, we might, you know, a construction company might be able to build, you know, a pandemic required hospital far quicker because of technology like this in times of real need, versus the longer time it could have spent without the technology.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, for me, it's all about data management, making things open source and learning from projects and, you know, and having what I call an as-built model that keeps changing because machines are talking to each other and their data's coming in and out. And you know, with the thing with MachineMax that you're doing is it, I'm really excited. I mean, I didn't know that before I spoke to you today. Really excited about that, because that whole idle time, that seeing where people things are in real time, allows you to say, well, why have we got this great big, for example, line of ADTs sat idling together in the same position? Well, it's because the excavator as such that's loading them has broken down, or it's because it's not specced up and we need more on site. We can see that happening. So either we take an ADT off the run or we put more digging capacity in. So these are things that are all learnt. And when you get that learning cycle and that model, you're making things as well that people have got to look after for the lifetime of a project. So, you know, you're digging sewers, trenches, infrastructure, foundations that may need to be used again when the structure or the thing that you've built needs a second life and is knocked down. So I think I would say demolition to demolition. You know, and if you model all of this stuff, collect all the data, when you demolish the structure, you can demolish it all and recycle it and then go further on. So, you know, let's talk about your thoughts on that. And obviously that relates to some of your other businesses, doesn't it? When we're talking about the landfill and reducing that, where we're talking about the remediation, I'd like you to explain that sort of program thing as well, please.
BIM, massively used term across construction. And we've never got it right as an industry. And I'd like to think we will at some point, but I don't think we do. And I think BIM will dissolve into, you know, the history of time, and something else will develop and replace it as we come together. But it is so important from a cost and from an environmental perspective to have an understanding of your building. I'm embarrassed to say, Peter, we had a water leak at our main office on our big, we've got a 14-acre site in near Kettering. And could we find the mains to the site to turn it off so that we could sort this water leak out? We could not. We built this site in, you know, in the early 2000s, late 90s, and we have lots of drawings, but not one of them with the main pipe, water pipe into place. And we had to get Anglia Water out to come and find the pipe for us. And that is highly embarrassing as someone that preaches about this stuff. We're just not doing it. You know, stuff like that, you know, it costs time, it costs money, it's wasteful. And there should be, you know, it comes back to, we're just talking about artificial intelligence and virtual reality. Yeah. It would be great if I could put a headset on and go and locate that water, or one of my team could go and locate that water pipe without us really having to do too much. I do hope that at some point, you know, what is BIM now remodels itself and rebrands itself and becomes something better. Because I suppose one of my other passions, and, you know, thinking about our other business units, you know, recycled, you know, demolishing something creates a mass of concrete and steel, usually recycling that is the future. You know, how we operate some quarries, but how much longer can we continue to dig stone out of the ground, process it and stick it into another construction site? But, you know, the future is really using a recycled aggregate. It's better for, it's already processed, it's better for the environment. And, you know, brings me onto soil. One of the things I've learned the last couple of years, how important having a respect for soil is. It's an incredibly important commodity, and it's very rarely given the respect it's deserved. And we've only in the last couple of weeks rebranded and relaunched a product that we call Super Soil. So our loan business has launched a product called Super Soil. It's amazing. It flies around and, you know, saves everybody. I joke, but
brilliant.
But this soil, you know, genuinely has more nutritional. It's not a manufactured soil. It's a pure, unlike most soils, it's a purely natural soil that is more nutritious than standard soils, which means you get better output from, you know, the carrots and the potatoes that you're growing in it. It is better for drainage, which will solve, you know, the problems we have around flooding. As we continue to build on our environment, we do create water run-ons. And if you've got soil operating the right way, it will help solve those problems. And most importantly, if you have a nutritious, active, natural soil, it's better for the planet because it's capturing more carbon. And those are just three. I'm not a soil expert. I've got a team of people that could talk about this for days, Peter, days, and they love it. You know, just three elements of what would seem normal, that we should have lots of natural soils everywhere. Surely soil is natural, but it's the huge benefits that it can bring to our daily lives, whether you be growing your potatoes in the garden or hoping not to get flooded when it rains too much.
Absolutely, you know, and we've seen that where I live in Stafford, you know, there's issues, and there's a lot of places all over the country with issues with flooding as well. And, you know, that comes to the point really of the soil stabilisation element to you in, excuse me, and you mentioned earlier a system, a thing that was new in that area, and that's a technology and an innovation that you are putting together to good use. So tell me what that's about.
Yeah, so we're one of, I suppose, two earthworks or soil stabilizers in the UK that have access to this, you know, PowerSEM product.
Right.
And that is core. Yeah, PowerSEM, that or RoadSEM as well. That is core to being able to reduce your carbon footprint on site, because you can, without having to import lots of virgin or recycled material, you can use, it gets called a magic powder. You know, it's not that type of powder.
Soils, magic powders. We're having a great time here, Matthew. My goodness me, yeah.
You know, you can use it to very quickly build up, you know, stable and solid foundations to, you know, put a road on very quickly without having to do a load of work. And obviously, that is more environmentally friendly. It is quicker. The problem is, it is really expensive to do, because it's a product with a lot of science in it, and it's working in a very clever way, binding lots of atoms in the ground together to do clever, wonderful, strong things. But you know, products like this that, you know, we're a huge believer in at Barton and Benny are going to be the future, because they will require less imported material. They'll require less time on site. You'll deliver stuff more quickly. You'll be able to, you know, build infrastructure and deliver, you know, roads, whether it be permanent or temporary, way more quickly than you would using conventional traditional methods around digging back and then building back up.
And I think, well, you know, for me, that sort of thing is about building back better. And you say it might be, you know, a more expensive process, but actually, if you look at what you said before, managing all this data, managing all the idle times, managing the fleet, using machine control, managing the fact that you know there are going to be fewer people on site, so they've got to come in and out of that site. This is going to be managing the environment better. Put it all together, you know, from materials and technology and science, and change that all. I mean, this is what we've seen, how science can play a part in, you know, saving us all from this this pandemic as well. But you add all of those things together, and actually it becomes more and more cost effective, and it actually becomes a solution which clients need to be aware of and which clients need to see. And therefore, again, a bit like machine control, a bit like, you know, the Machine Max technology, it becomes mandated. And that's the journey we're taking, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a lot of clients that don't know about it, but need to know about it. But for us, I'm seeing this as a USP. You know, we are pulling all these, you know, we talked about it throughout this entire thing, right? This entire call, we've talked about how, you know, technology is the future, but it is about pulling them all together. And like you say, Peter, if we can genuinely pull all these things together, get them organized into a stack, I'm doing it with my hands here for everybody listening, you know, organizing the stack of technology. You know, it will be USP for your business, because, you know, not today or tomorrow, but certainly in the future, you know, as a business, we will be able to deliver stuff quicker and more cost effectively for the client, which ultimately means they're happy with their end product, and we're happy with our delivery.
And that, I think, you know, is a great point, Matthew, to wrap it up on this Saturday morning. We've gone through, folks, the diversity and inclusion in the industry. We've talked about technology. We've shown the vision of sustainability, reduction, and the fact that Matthew is an electric fan just like me. I've been talking about JCB's electric. I launched the Volvo Construction Electric range recently as well. We're custodians of the planet by doing things better. And, you know, it's all going to be about data. It's all going to be about change. We've got a young leader here that's not afraid to get out there and make this industry a better place for everyone. And Matthew, I thank you very much for sharing all this time with me on a Saturday morning. Please enjoy the rest of your weekend. And I appreciate all of the time you spent with us. And I will see you at the school.
See you at the school. Peter, thank you for having me and letting me waffle on for an hour about some stuff that I'm pretty passionate about. Oh, very kind of you.
That's what I do. If I could do it every day, all day, I would. And it's certainly been a pleasure. And we'll be putting all the details from Matthew in the post there. But Matthew, the one final thing is, I will see you at the school. I also want to come and visit your sites in the future so I can document what you're doing, because you've been very kind enough to come on to my show. And I will see all of you and the team, family members, and a lot of them very, very soon. Take care of yourself.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. So it's a massive thank you to Matthew Ayres for spending some time with me on a Saturday morning, the Group MD of the Benny Group, which has Barton Plant among its businesses. What an insightful podcast that was from a young leader that's really determined to push this industry forward. And this podcast is all made possible thanks to the support of Leica Geosystems, the surveying and machine control specialist. And if you want to find out how you can use their tools and their software to connect to the worksite and start your roadmap to a digitalisation, then please do get in touch with them at leica-geosystems.com. So that's it for another Podcast with Leadership episode. Please look after yourself and your families out there. And until the next time, goodbye.